Welcome back to another episode of Recruitment Journeys with me, Pete Watson from Mint R2R, Australia's longest serving rec to rec. Unapologetic plug there, completely shameless. Recruitment Journeys is the original and longest running podcast dedicated to you, the Australian recruitment industry. And in this podcast, as ever, we chat to hand-selected recruitment identities about the highs and the lows of their particular recruitment journeys in the hope to educate, inspire, and motivate you, our listeners. Now, please remember, on the off chance that you've listened to one of these episodes and indeed enjoyed it, it would be massively appreciated if you could like, share, or subscribe, or ideally, all three. We don't ask for much at Recruitment Journeys, just a little bit of love. Massive thanks to our sponsors, A Positive Finance. Everything you need to start or scale your recruitment business. Right, that's enough of the intros. It's all taken care of. Let's get into the next episode of Recruitment Journeys. What's it like to join a company as one of their very first employees and then go on a 17-year journey with them through GFCs, recessions, pandemics, sale of the business, highs, lows, and everything in between? And how does it shape you as a professional? Well, we ask these questions and more of the wonderful Sandra Rowlandson from Bluefin Resources in this week's episode of Recruitment Journeys. Sandra Rowlandson from Bluefin Resources, good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Pete. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for doing this. Thanks for coming on Recruitment Journeys.
Pleasure.
Exciting to hear that this is your first rodeo when it comes to the world of podcasting.
It is. I think I was saying before, I listened to millions of them, obsessed with podcasts.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I hope you enjoy it. I hope it's not too taxing. I hope it's fun for both of us. I'm sure it will be, knowing who you are, Sandra. Well, look, I won't be arrogant enough to assume that you've heard any of these podcasts, even though a couple of your Bluefin colleagues have been on in the past, you know, yes. The Donovans and the Hones of this world.
I know, only the fellas so far.
Say again, sorry?
Only the boys so far.
Yes, exactly. I know. That's my bad. But Recruitment Journeys, as a quick intro, we are the original recruitment-focused podcast here in Australia. And what we do is we hand-select recruitment identities, luminaries and legends such as yourself, Sandra, and we talk about your recruitment journey, how you went from A to Z, in the hope to educate, inspire, and motivate anybody who might listen to Sandra Rowlandson's story and think to themselves, yep, I like a bit of what Sandra has done. I'm going to kind of emulate that career. And here we go. So Sandra, you need to be as inspirational today as you possibly can be, if that's not too much pressure.
Of course, no problem. I'll try. And hopefully I come off as inspiring.
You do that. Yeah, I do that with your eyes closed, Sandra. So listen, I've already given the 7 or 8 listeners an introduction as to who Sandra Rowlandson is. Yeah. But in your own words, who are you?
Yeah, good question. And it was a big question I asked myself, actually, turning 50 this year, Pete. Big
Stop birthday it. This year. I just did a few weeks ago.
Did you? Congratulations. Happy birthday.
Thank you. It's no big deal, Sandra. It's Are you worried
no
about
big
it?
Deal. I agree with you.
It's no biggie. Big nah, it's, I, yeah, I, sorry to hijack your conversation, but I look at it this way, right? I am a better version of myself at the age of 50 than I was at 30 and 40. So
absolutely agree.
So with applying that concept, then who cares?
I was actually listening to something on the way to work this morning. I can't remember what it was on, but they were talking about, you know, happiness and times in your life when people are the most happy. And they sort of did all this statistical analysis and sort of broke it down. And they said 35 to 45 are often the most unhappy in people's lives, whether it's getting their life together and there's a lot of stress and money pressures and people might have young families and all the other stuff that comes along with that. But from your mid-40s upwards, that's when they say people start to really get into their sort of happy moment in life where you feel a bit more settled and stable and you know where you're going. And, yeah, it just makes a lot more sense. So I definitely agree with that.
And you know who you are at 50.
You know who you are, yeah. And you're not – you're not so worried about what other people think, and you've got some comfort in yourself and your own life and what the future holds. So turning 50 was no big deal. And in fact, I loved it. I took a month off work and I went to Europe with a bunch of friends. We rented a villa in the south of France, traveled through Italy. It was incredible.
Sounds amazing. So who are you then? Who is the wonderful 50-year-old Sandra Rawlinson?
Well, I mean, I think we're all sort of a product of our beginnings. So a Brizzy girl, born and bred. Grew up in Brisbane in a little suburb called Tarragindi. Sales director now at Bluefin Resources, and I've been here for 17 years, Pete, as you know. But started my career in banking, did an economics degree, worked in banking. And then in 2006, I'd been back. I did the UK thing. You know, everyone, most people go and spend that 2 or 3 years in London. Had the time of my life. But I'd been back for a few years. I was working in financial markets for Suncorp in Brisbane as a cash dealer. And I wanted to move. I wanted to move cities. Brisbane just felt a bit small and a bit same. And I knew everyone and everything that was going on, you know, so I thought. So, you know, actively pursued an opportunity to move down to Sydney. And 17 years later, here I am. And I lived in Surry Hills when I first arrived. And 10 years ago, I bought in Surry Hills.
Yeah.
So I'm a bit of a creature of habit, I would say.
Right. Okay, well let's fill the gaps. How you went from Brisbane to 17 years at, you know, one of the household names of the recruitment industry, and I suppose that's part of what I want to talk about today. I want to talk about tenure in one company, because it's something, you know, it's considered to be the holy grail, right? Anybody who can find a recruitment home and stay there for a long time. You know, but like when I get a CV with strong tenure, it's what I get excited about the most. I'm sure it's the same in your world, but I'm keen to talk about, you know, what the ingredients are around that. The pros are obviously obvious. Are there cons? You know, that kind of thing. I don't want to use the word institutionalized, Sandra, but you know, we'll throw it out there. We'll throw it out there, see where it goes. But before we get into the career chat, I like to ask a couple of questions just to give the listeners an understanding as to who you are behind the recruitment veneer. So I have two ice-breaking questions. What did you want to be growing up, Sandra? Because let's be honest, I have yet to meet anybody who wanted to be a recruiter when they were growing up.
Yeah, great question. Look, I'd say I reckon it started at the end of primary school and then through the whole of high school. I thought I wanted to do law. I wanted to become a lawyer. And not just a lawyer, I wanted to be a barrister. So I don't know where that came from. I think I loved talking, you know, from an early age. And I remember, you know, report cards in primary school, it was always Sandra Rollinson. She's got, you know, she's great in the class, but she's really distracting to the other students and she just needs to listen a little bit more. And I don't think that's something that's really ever quite left me. So, you know, I did debating in high school. I was captain of the debating team, like a real debating nerd. And I loved it. But I think I'd say in about grade 11 and grade 12, I started to sort of open my mind up a little bit more and I was interested in economics also.
Yeah.
So then when I got to the end of high school in grade 12, you know, it was, do I go down a law path or do I go down sort of an economics path? And actually, you know, the grades I ended up getting made the choice for me because I didn't get a high enough grade to get into law. Because, you know, law, you have to have a really high score. Mm. So in Queensland at the time, it was called a TE score, tertiary entrance score. And I got a really good TE score. I got 945. Now, that's only going to make sense to people that are my age from Queensland. But you needed 965, I think, was the cutoff for law. So that was sort of made up my mind for me. And I went down the, you know, that banking, financial markets, economics. And then I stayed in that, you know, until I moved out of it and got into recruitment. So always wanted to be a lawyer and just went down a slightly different path or a very different path.
Yeah, I was going to say, ever so slightly different path.
Yeah.
Okay, and tell us one thing about Sandra Rawlinson that not many people know.
You know what? This is a hard one. I'm a very open book, Pete. There's not much people don't know about me. Like I'm not a secretive person by nature. I'm not sort of a closed personality. I'm really open and transparent, which can sometimes be a bit of a fault as well. I mean, I don't, maybe that, you know, like I'm a fairly confident personality. When people meet me, they'll think I'm fairly confident. But like in this instance, there's no way in the world I will not listen back to this podcast. I cannot stand to hear my own voice or see myself on camera. It just gives me the cringe.
Yeah.
I'm sure we're all like that. You know, you hear your voice on a recording and you think to yourself, is that how I sound? My voice sounds really different from the way it sounds in my head.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it's weird. I can't stand it. I will not listen to this podcast.
Okay. And do you know what? I think that applies to a lot of recruiters. Without getting too kind of deep and psychological, I personally definitely identify as an introvert, right?
Yeah.
100% I'm an introvert. I know I am. If you put me at a dinner table with six or seven people, I'm the quietest on the table.
Yeah.
Yet I'm comfortable doing this because I've been doing it a few years.
Yeah.
But we work in an industry where you're almost forced to take control of the conversation and the situation. Then that's misunderstood as confidence, but sometimes it isn't.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I think I'm a bit like that. Like, if you call yourself an introvert, I call myself I don't know if it's just a bullshit term, but an extroverted introvert.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously on the surface, I am quite extroverted. I actually like other people's company. I'm not sort of shy, meeting new people or anything like that. But I also do really appreciate my own time and quiet time and reflection time. And I think that introverted part of both of us, Pete, make us good at what we do. In recruitment, you've got to have a nice balance of being able to really listen and ask the right questions and sit back and sort of see what comes at you. So I see it as a strength for you. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh God. I didn't expect to go as deep as early as we did. Okay. Right. So classic question. You've kind of touched on it a little bit. But how and why did you break into the wonderful world of recruitment? We know that the law thing, for whatever reason, didn't pan out and you went down a different route. How did that? How did you find yourself in recruitment?
Yeah. You know what? It was somewhat deliberate. I know a lot of people sort of fall into recruitment. I didn't fall into recruitment. But as I said, I was in Brisbane. I was looking to move to Sydney. I was looking at an opportunity to move with Suncorp, who I was working with. But then when I was perusing the ads, I think it was through Seek, I saw a recruitment agency advertising for, recruitment consultant role, no experience required. If you've got financial services background, fabulous, come and have a chat to us. And it all just unraveled from there, really. I ended up flying down to Sydney and meeting that recruitment firm, and I ended up it was really awful on reflection, but I remember having 5 hours back to back with them and met 3 different people.
Right.
And we weren't communicating with each other because I didn't have a break in that whole 5 hours.
Yeah.
And I remember someone, I think it was the last person, saying, "Hey, has anyone got you a glass of water?
Wow.
Do you need a bathroom break?" And I'm like, "Oh, that'd be great." Anyway, the long story short is their MD ended up flying up to Brisbane and they just set up a Brisbane office. And so he said, "I'll come and meet her in person." And then they turned around and said, "No." They said, "Look, we like her, but, tell her to go get some sales experience or recruitment experience and come back to us in 12 months.
Wow.
And that just lit a fire in me. I'm a fairly competitive person.
Yeah, how dare you?
Right, I am going to do this. So that's when I discovered the world of, rec to recs. I didn't even know of their existence before. And I met with someone in Sydney and was farmed out to 5 or 6 different agencies. And I think the third agency I met was Bluefin, and the rest, they say, is history.
And that was that?
That was that. I met James, who was our CEO, James Hone. And Bluefin was everything I didn't think I wanted. It was a really small firm. I think it was only 8 consultants when I joined.
Yeah.
It was to come in, the opportunity was to do the risk management desk. I'm like, I don't want to do risk. I don't know anything about risk. Mm. I come from a financial markets background. That's the space I want to recruit in. But outside of that stuff, there was just an overwhelming, I don't know, do you get into that head, heart, gut type of thinking? Your head. Head, heart, gut. So my gut and my heart were telling me overwhelmingly that Bluefin was the right place, even though it didn't tick any of the boxes I thought I wanted ticked.
Yeah.
And it obviously turns out to be correct. So yeah, trust your gut and your heart.
And how much of that was because of James?
Oh, a lot of it. a huge amount was because of James. It was an immediate connection with him as a personality, his passion for recruitment and for the company that he was, you know, the owner of. He wasn't the CEO at that time. It was before we sold to OSI. So, you know, he was the founder.
Yeah.
And immediately I just had, I had no walls up. I remember telling him, we laugh about it still. He's actually in the office today. But we were laughing about it this morning about, I think, my second interview with him. I yawned in my second interview and he goes, "Oh, I'm sorry, we're keeping you up." I'm like, sorry, I was out with friends last night till 2 o'clock. You know, I'm just a bit tired.
Yeah.
You know, we're in an interview. But he liked that in me, and immediately I just felt crazy comfortable with him. So, it just felt like
just clicked.
Just clicked. And you've met James. Like, he's, if you didn't think you would enjoy recruitment, he could convince you in 20 seconds that recruitment is the best industry to work in. So,
yeah. Look, I mean, his passion for the industry, as somebody who's been in it as long as he has,
absolutely,
which applies to you. I've always said this about Bluefin. Is that there are few businesses out there that seem to have as many people within it that actually enjoy recruitment.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many recruiters who just don't like what they do, and they go through the motions with reasonable success. Yeah. Well, Bluefin seems to have passionate recruiters within it, wall to wall.
Absolutely. And career recruiters. Mm. You know, people aren't saying, "Well, I'll do this until I find something else," or, "Well, this is the easiest way to get a visa." People that see this as a super valid career choice, and a great professional career to be in. So that was just what came through. I don't know if all of that came through in the first interview. I just connected with them. You know, I'm not going to mention the other agencies, but, you know, there was a bunch of, most of them were sort of the bigger players.
Mm.
You know, and they felt so similar to what I'd left. You know, I'd left big corporate.
Mm.
I remember one of them from one of the big agencies, the GM that was interviewing me was sort of walking me around the room and telling, you know, showing me how he knew everyone on the floor's names and talking to me about how, you know, every Friday, you know, he takes everyone out for a couple of hours of, you know, free beers. And, you know, I'd come from that financial markets where, you know, most of the people had corporate credit cards and they were out, you know, boozing all the time anyway.
Mm.
And I was 32. You know, I wasn't a kid. And it just felt like some of those other larger firms. I went, you know what, 10 years ago, this could have been great. But it's not my place anymore. Like, it's not, I need to be somewhere where there's a bit more autonomy and, you know, you've got more of an adult environment. And so, yeah, that's what Bluefin felt like, you know, a small group of people that just had an incredible amount of autonomy.
Given it was a smaller business,
yeah,
and given the fact that you were in your early 30s,
yeah,
and you had a career behind you, did any part of you feel like joining Bluefin was a risk?
To friends and family, they thought I was taking a huge risk.
Mm.
But this is when it comes back to that head, heart, gut thing.
Yeah.
There was something within me that was just telling me this was right. Like, it actually didn't feel risky. It just felt like, number one, it felt like something I could do.
Mm.
Number two, it felt like something I'd enjoy doing. And number three, I don't know, like 32, you're still young enough to pivot. And I thought, well, if it doesn't work out, I'll just go back to banking.
Yeah.
So I didn't feel like I was risking too much. You know, I didn't have a big fat mortgage I was trying to service. I didn't have, you know, kids I was trying to put through, you know, school or anything like that.
Mm.
So, you know, the only person I was risking was myself. And I, you know, I felt like I had enough to fall back on if it didn't work out. But it didn't feel risky at all.
Okay. Did it, and did you, obviously, because your entry into recruitment was not a typical one. You weren't coming from like a B2B sales background. Did you take to it like a duck to water? I suspect you did, but did you?
I'd say the first, I don't know. That's an interesting question. I remember being shit scared the first 3 months.
Mm.
Just going, oh my God. And I remember making a placement in the first 2 months, I think it was, and it was an incredibly hard role to fill. It was a quantitative analyst role for a small company in North Sydney. The guy went through 5 rounds, plus a presentation, plus a case study, and finally got the job.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember sitting back there and going, how do you ever do that multiple times? How do you do that 30 or 40 times in a year? And I remember just going, I don't know how I'm going to rinse and repeat this because that felt so hard. So, you know, like I, you know, I mean, I ended up having a fantastic first year. I think that was also partly helped. You know, there's always been a luck in recruitment. 2006 was a great year in recruitment. There was jobs for everyone. You know, that was when you'd call up ads, and 5 out of 10 ads that you'd chase a roll down with, you'd pick the roll up with. So it was a different sort of market. So I did well in my first year, but I would say, you know, I was definitely in the first few months, I did question, is this, am I going to be able to do this? Am I going to be able to be successful?
Because I think when you're starting out in recruitment, you feel every placement, don't you? And the highs are so high and the lows are so low.
Yep.
And, you know, you really put yourself through the ringer with every single placement and every single dropout and every single rejection and whatever it might be.
Like genuinely losing sleep over it. I remember it was not uncommon to wake up in the middle of the night and go, where am I going to get those from? Where am I going to find that person from? I need to find that position. You know, I reckon that would have been like that for the first 5 years.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because I had this conversation recently where somebody messaged me out of the blue, and I've actually asked him if I can, you know, take his name off and use it as a LinkedIn post. But he basically said, Pete, you must get hundreds of messages like this, but I'm in recruitment and I absolutely hate it and I only do it for the money. You must see people like this all the time. What's your advice? And I was like, well, mate, I can only draw my own experience, but I've been there, right? There's times when I've been doing my job and it's just been, you know, blow after blow after blow. And you think to yourself, why am I doing this to myself? Is it really, really worth it? And then it was only about 2 or 3 years ago, bearing in mind I've been doing this for 20 years. It was only two or three years ago when I suddenly started, I wouldn't say I stopped caring, but I just sort of accepted that things will go well and things will go badly. And if things go badly, if you're playing the long game, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And nowadays, I had a team placement fallout late last year. It was worth close to 100 grand to me in fees. And it didn't happen. And I swear to God, I got over it within an hour.
Yeah, amazing.
whereas 10 years ago, it would have been, all right, where's the nearest cliff?
Yeah. Well, that's just genuine resilience. You know, like that's incredible that you've got that skill, because I mean that's what I look for when I hire recruiters. Because otherwise they're gonna have such an unhappy time in recruitment. Yeah. You know, if you can't find that resilience and you can't accept, you know, the things that you can't control.
Yeah.
And make sure you do control the things you can, you know, do everything to do the, you know, control the things you can, like you're gonna hate it. It's a tough gig.
It certainly is. It certainly is. Okay, so you found yourself in recruitment. You got through that. You pushed through that pain barrier.
Yeah.
At what point, looking around the room and looking at what James was doing to grow the business and seeing the people he was bringing in, at what point did you think to yourself, do you know what, I might go on a journey here. I might stay with these guys for a while. Everything feels right. Did how early on was it that you thought this was going to be a long term play for you?
Oh, that's a good question. I think pretty early on. I was given an opportunity to move into people leadership, you know, to move into management in my first 12 months. So the person who the person I was reporting into when I joined left the business to go and I think she went into exec recruitment. She did that for a little bit and then anyway, got out of the industry and then she's in sort of internal talent now. But she left and there was three of us in total on the risk desk. That left two of us. And James said, do you want to take over, you know, leadership of the team and continue to grow this out? And without hesitating, I went, yep, absolutely. I'd love to.
Wow.
So I think that's helped me, Pete, because I got that opportunity to pivot so early on. And then from then on, it's just been an opportunity to continue to pivot, challenge myself, grow, develop in different areas. So it just became an ongoing gradual thing. So I don't know if there was a moment in time where I ever thought I'm going to be at Bluefin, you know, for the next 17 years, but still hasn't been a moment in the last 17 years when I've thought I'm not getting what I need here. I can't grow anymore. I'm burnt out. I'm done, I've achieved, I've learned everything, I need to try something new. So, I mean, that's definitely down to, there's a lot of luck in there. I absolutely believe in a bit of luck. But it's also, you know, I'm a fairly ambitious person. So, you know, I said yes to a lot of things and I put my hand up and I asked to be stretched and challenged. So, I don't know how early it was, but I think it was pretty early because I was given an opportunity to pivot so quickly.
How did you know when you grabbed the opportunity with both hands to step into management, how did you know you were going to be able to do it?
You never know for sure. I had a feeling. I mean, again, you know, I wasn't a baby. I was 32, 33. Mm. In school, in other roles, you know, before I joined Bluefin, you know, I often found myself moving into sort of leadership or mentorship or, you know, team lead type roles. I think I've got a natural affinity with leadership. But that doesn't mean I was any good at it. Honestly, in the first 12 months, I reckon I was pretty average at being a leader. I found it incredibly hard to balance the self and, you know, the team and then to grow that team.
Yeah.
At the time, you know, like you're so, you know, especially in those early days, you're so motivated by the billings, the money, the fees on the board that I found it really hard to, you know, put time and attention to other people without thinking I was giving up something for myself. I got over that fairly quickly. I would say that would have been maybe the first 12 months, a bit of a learning curve for me. I didn't know for sure I'd be good, but I had a feeling. I had a feeling leadership would be something I would enjoy and I could, you know, I could add value to other people.
So as a now experienced leader, what do you think is the most important attribute or character trait to ensure success as somebody who has to lead by example?
Character trait of success in a leadership role or in
Now, what do you think you have to be a good leader now that you've been in people leadership for quite a long time?
Yeah, that's a really good question. For me, I can't remember the exact saying, but there's a saying that always resonated with me. It's good leaders are there to serve their team, not for the team to serve their needs.
Yeah.
So that is something that that's a real mindset piece. But my job, if I was to sum my job description up in one sentence, it is to enable and support my direct reports to be the best they can be.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you don't think that is something that you will enjoy,
yeah,
if you don't think that is something that will make you feel personally fulfilled, then don't get into leadership. I mean, and we've got plenty of examples like that, you know, at Bluefin and in recruitment where some people are brilliant ICs, individual contributors, and they shouldn't move into leadership. There's a real altruistic sort of aspect to leadership, I think, that if you don't have that within you and you don't genuinely enjoy seeing other people develop and grow and achieve their full potential with your help and support and guidance, coaching and training and development, it's not for you. You know, like if you're doing leadership because you think it's the best way to earn more money, it's the wrong. It is absolutely.
Yeah. You have to be selfless, right?
Yeah, you've got to be selfless.
I couldn't do it, Sandra.
The rewards come.
Yeah.
They will come if you do that part well. But if you're doing it because you think, if I manage a team, I'm going to get team override over them and, you know, I'm going to earn more money, and that's the number one motivator, leadership ain't for you.
Yeah. God, I couldn't do it. Yeah. Or maybe I could. I don't know.
I think you could.
I don't know. I don't know if I'm selfless enough.
you do have to be selfless. You've got to be willing. You've also got to be. I think one of the things that's helped me. I mean, I think I'm a good leader, and I think one of the things that's helped me is fairly quickly, not initially, but fairly quickly, I was able to learn that you need to remove your own ego out of the room. If I couldn't accept that people underneath my remit or within my team were going to be better recruiters than me, and if I did not genuinely want them to be better than I was as a recruiter, then it's not the right job for me. So I see people outbilling what I build, doing better, listening to them on the phone and go, wow, they're fantastic at what they do. That is a really great recruiter right there. And not being open to learning both ways.
Yeah,
then, you know, like you shouldn't be in leadership.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Okay. So a big part of this conversation is about tenure.
Yeah.
And, you know, 17 years you've been at Bluefin Resources. And interestingly enough, I don't even think you're the longest serving Bluefinner. Are you? No, I think Duncan's. Yeah.
He's longer than me.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. So that would lead me to ask the question, what's the secret sauce of Bluefin? Why does Bluefin, what's available at Bluefin that allows people to remain content and challenged and engaged for many, many years, almost decades?
Yeah. I mean, right at the beginning of the chat, we were talking about, you know, Bluefin having people that really, you know, see recruitment consultants as a valid career choice.
Mm.
I think that's one of the aspects or one of the ingredients of the special sauce is that you are, you know, you're surrounded by people that really believe in what we do and see the value in what we do, you know, for both clients and candidates.
Mm.
And that's not just lip service. You know, like you genuinely see the value that you're adding to the communities that we operate in. And that people, you know, people see it as a really valid career choice. So that in itself is a nice, it's a really nice environment to be sitting in, you know, day in, day out. Outside of that, I think one of the things we've always done pretty well is, you know, we're not a small company anymore. We're not, you know, seven or eight recruiters when I joined. But I think we've always been really good at keeping that or retaining that entrepreneurial small company agility sort of spirit within us.
Mm.
So, you know, we fully encourage everyone to have a voice at Bluefin. You know, no idea is a bad idea. Every idea would be considered. So I think there's room, you know, if there's a direction you want to move in, if there's an opportunity you want to grasp, if there's a new idea you want to bring to the table and run with it and own it, there's an opportunity to do that. So I think that's something else as well. Like it's not these bureaucratic layers above you that you have to get the approval of 12 people before anything gets signed off. So it's still got a really nice agility to it.
Yeah.
That's what I see. That's what I've experienced. And, you know, I can see a lot of other people experience that, you know, at Bluefin. So, you know, James was always of the thought that if you're sick of recruitment, like if recruitment's not for you, you leave Bluefin. Mm. But if you want to stay within the recruitment industry, we can offer you a role.
Mm.
We can offer you a different direction or a different career path or a new way to look at what you're doing. We can help you become the best version of a recruitment consultant, if that's what you want. If you want to be an individual contributor, help you become the absolute best version of that you want to be. So I think that's nice. You know, like you don't feel like you're stuck with no room to go. I think it's big, you know, decent. We're a big company now, but we've still got that nice small company vibe and feel, I think.
So, okay. So the business has changed so much, right, though, in those 17 years. Off the top of my head, obviously you have a new CEO. James is no longer the CEO. The business was sold quite a few years ago. Yeah. You know, the business is probably 10 times bigger than it was when you started. Now, I would imagine if I was to pin you down and say, Sandra, what did you prefer? Did you prefer the early days when you're all in the trenches together, or do you prefer it now? What would you say what period of time in Bluefin's existence did you enjoy the most?
Yeah, that's a hard question. That is a really hard question. I'll take that in two parts. So the first part is actually I'll take the second part. What's the part that I enjoyed? What area, what time in Bluefin did I enjoy the most? To be honest, this is going to sound weird and maybe morbid, but when I look back, and obviously hindsight's a beautiful thing, but when you look back, I think those moments that felt enjoyable in hindsight were those really tough market moments. So, you know, I was at Bluefin for GFC.
Yeah.
The market was shit. But, you know, you always had so much to do. Everyone was in it together. We were all looking at ways to make money, get out of it, get a fee on the board, find a new role, find a new opportunity, get some new contacts. And Ryan's Bar is downstairs from Australia Square where we've been 17 years.
Yeah.
And that was a great source of comfort for a lot of time. The amount of money I would have put into that place over the last 17 years is obnoxious. Then you had COVID. You know, like I'm also one of those weird people. I'm sure there's a handful of us out there that actually I didn't hate COVID. Like, you know, I've got a really nice group of friends that were very close to me, and you know, we were really connected during that time, and we were doing all these things at work to make people feel more connected. And I think it's those moments when it's a really challenging market, and obviously it's been challenging for the last, you know, 8 to 10 months as well, with it, you know, economic conditions have made it a challenging market. Those moments when you feel like you're all in it together, I think create a really nice feeling of connectedness and camaraderie, and you're all trying to come up with the solutions together, and you're all looking in the same direction. And like in hindsight, like they don't necessarily feel incredibly enjoying when you're in them, but in hindsight, when you come out of them and then you see the benefits of what you did during those moments to make people feel connected, and what you did to stay connected to your market, you know, you start getting the rewards from all that work. That feels good, but you have to go through that tough time to feel what it's like to come out the other side.
COVID was brutal for so many reasons, but it made us realize we could live without so many things, and it made us focus on, you know, some old fashioned values, like, you know, looking after each other and camaraderie, and you know, and stop being competitive.
Absolutely. And how nice was it to have weekends free of any plans? Like, you know, I'm sure if it extended much longer, I wouldn't be saying that. I'm sure people in Victoria that were locked down for a lot longer are like, you're crazy.
Yeah.
But for the short period of time that Sydney was locked down, you know, I think we had 6 months max. You know, it sort of felt like a bit of a, I mean, my friends and I were like, we were like the Famous Five. We were riding around on our bicycles on weekends, going and exploring the suburbs. Yeah.
Oh, we were cycling around our neighborhood, handing out homemade scones, me and my kids.
Yes, I was making things and handing them out to my friends. Absolutely,
it was like being back in the '40s.
No, it was. Putting comfort in something like that. Yeah, I don't know. Weird.
But the industry as well. You know, we all stopped hating each other. You know, everybody just wrapped an arm around each other and started supporting each other. It was very cool.
It was really.
I don't think we've gone back to the bad old days. I think there's still a level of that, you know, camaraderie that still exists to this day post-COVID, which is lovely.
I do agree. I agree. Mm. And then the first part of that question, Pete, is what part of my recruitment career at Bluefin I think I enjoyed the most? Is that what you were?
Sandra, I can't remember. I'm just grateful that you're keeping us on track.
I think it was something like that. And I basically all I wanted to say on that is I enjoy every moment. You know, I enjoy every year and every new iteration and every sort of career sort of step I've taken. I do, you know, there's always nostalgia, you know, when you think of, you know, the old days, and you think about, you know, what recruitment looked like, you know, 15 years ago and before we all had LinkedIn. You know, you were scrolling through the paper on Friday, seeing who's advertising roles and trying to chase them down. And it was a smaller firm, and, you know, our incentive trips or our, you know, sales conferences felt quite different. There's a nostalgia to that, but I think that's just a natural nostalgia as you get older.
Yeah.
I think every iteration has had its ups and downs, but overall enjoyment.
17 years at Bluefin, as we keep saying. Is there a point, do you think, when you look at some of the people who've worked for you for many years? Because I've heard recruitment leaders from other companies where they've told me that they see some people just run their course, and they take them aside and say, we love you, we value you, you've been so important to this business, but we do think you need to move on and try something else, try and work somewhere else. We'll be sorry to see you go, but we think it's the best thing for you. And that's just them being, you know, caring humans. Do you having worked in the same place for a long time, do you believe that there is a time when too long is too long? Or do you think that the benefits of staying in one place for a long time outweigh the negatives?
Obviously, in the time I've been here, I've seen people, you know, within our business where you can see that their time is done. And I think the beautiful experience that I've had with people like that is they've made the decision themselves.
Mm.
They've been forced into that decision. They've definitely come to that conclusion themselves.
Mm.
My personal experience is, I mean, I've got an exit plan. You know, I won't go into the details of what that is, but I sat down with my financial planner when I turned 40, Pete, so 10 years ago. And I gave her a number and I said, this is the age I want to be financially free, with the financial freedom to be able to retire. So I've got an exit plan for myself, and I've got, you know, I'm sure I've got a couple of other iterations at Bluefin before that happens, but I can see that panning out at Bluefin. So it's not in the too distant future. Now, who knows what will happen? I mean, I'm not sitting here saying, right, at this date I'm out the door. But I just want to work towards, this is a personal thing for me, work towards what life will look like, you know, when I do retire. And I don't want to retire at 65. I want to retire earlier than that and move into, you know, who knows, move into something different. So I think it's good for everyone to have an exit plan of when they think they would like to exit what they're doing. But who knows, in that future point in time, I may turn around to Christine, CEO, and be in a different role entirely. All I know is that I want to make sure that when I'm walking out the door, Pete, that there's a great succession plan in place underneath me, and that's well advanced already. I wouldn't walk out the door today and say, see you later, good luck.
How would they ever replace you, Sandra?
Oh, easy. No one's irreplaceable. Trust me. Trust me. There's a lot of good people. There's a lot of great people out there. There's a lot of great people at Bluefin.
Yeah. Exit plan. That's an interesting subject though. So I vowed, probably when I was going through my dark rec-to-rec days, I vowed that if I was still doing rec-to-rec at the age of 50, I would literally jump off the highest filing cabinet that I could find. But here I am at 50 and there's no end in sight.
I think exit plans are good for just giving you I like to set goals. So I'm a fairly goal-oriented person. I love a to-do list. I use it every weekend. I've got a to-do list of things I'm doing that weekend. Outside of, the work stuff.
Do you write down your goals, Sandra?
Loosely for my life. For my career, I do. I'm quite specific about career goals and what I want to achieve and when I want to achieve them by, and what the world's going to look like over the next 5 years. I've got a 5-year plan. My personal life, it's a bit more loose. I don't know. I'm sort of a bit here and there on that. I'd say career-wise, very goal-oriented. Personal, I'm a bit more flexible.
Yeah. So I know a recruitment leader who writes down his goals religiously every year, actually takes himself off, or pretended to a deserted cabin in the forest. Yeah. Takes a bottle of expensive red wine and writes down his life goals. He's done it every year, apparently, for 20 years, except 1 year. And that 1 year that he didn't do it, he said that was his worst year ever, professionally and personally.
That's
coincidence?
Inspiring. That's fantastic.
Who knows? I don't know. I don't do it very well. I just plod. I'm a plodder.
Yeah. I don't know. I think you've got, I don't know. I don't see that in you.
Oh, no, I've got a formula, which I just repeat every year.
Yeah, well, that's okay. It doesn't matter if your goals are the same every year.
Yeah.
You're still achieving something every year.
Yeah, one would hope. Yeah. Okay, so you talk about iterations and, you possibly got a couple more iterations at Bluefin. What's next for you? Do you yet know what your next iteration is?
Not 100%, no. So, basically I want to move out of my chair so someone else can sit in it. So that's definitely an iteration for me. In relation to what that role looks like that I move into that allows someone to step into my shoes, I'm not 100% sure. There's lots of different pathways we could go down and explore. But regardless, whatever it is, Pete, it'll be something that's very people-oriented. So that's the part of the job that I enjoy the most is, connecting and collaborating with people. So, whether it's a mixture of internal and external on the client side, whether it's more client side or more internal, I don't know. We'll work that out as we go along. It's just important that I create space for someone else to step up. Because, I was lucky enough to join Bluefin at a time when, we were small and there was all the room in the world. So I need to make sure that I'm creating room underneath me.
Do you feel when you reflect back 17 years, I keep mentioning that magical number, Do you feel lucky that you made the choice to join Bluefin?
Do you think it was so lucky?
Yeah.
It is literally the best decision I've ever made in my work life. Best decision ever made.
Yeah.
And it's weird because sometimes I sort of sit between, oh God, I should have got into this 10 years earlier because I love it so much. I just love recruitment. But I wouldn't have been the same person, you know, 10 years before that. So who knows? That's playing with fire a little bit. You know, would I have been the sort of person that would have stuck it out and stayed there and still been there all those years later? I don't know. Like the person you are at 32 is different from the person you are at 22. So I think, you know, it happened at the right. To be honest, I think it probably happened on balance at the right time. For me, it was like that sort of second real career pivot. It incredibly, incredibly lucky. I mean, just the earning, you know what it's like in recruitment when you're doing well, the earning potential is just phenomenal. I remember that for the first, you know, 5 to 10 years of just going, this is amazing. What an incredible industry. You know, the harder you work, the more you get rewarded. Like, wow. So that, you know, that just allowed me, like I just felt incredibly lucky for that because, you know, the financial rewards allow you to do so much more in your life.
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
Yeah.
So you clearly still love the industry. You clearly still have so much passion and energy for it. What is it? What is it about recruitment that makes you bounce out of bed every day and just attack the day as you clearly do?
I mean, it's changed for me over the years because I'm not hands-on anymore. I don't place roles. So I don't have that thrill of the chase, you know, that real sales thrill that you get. But, you know, these days it's seeing that in others, you know, genuinely it's seeing that in others and being in, like, I get incredibly excited, you know, for the guys in my business unit, you know, when they do well. I get excited for anyone in our business, whether they're under my remit or not, when you see them doing well. It's just a genuine, I just see the future, you know, happening for them and the success panning out for them. And it's incredibly rewarding to work for a company that's allowed people to see that success and, you know, be directly involved in it, you know, for people that I manage and coach and develop as well. So it really is just seeing people love the industry as much as I do that gets me out of bed every day.
I love it. Alexandra.
Cycling into the office.
Thank you so much for your candor and walking us through your recruitment journey. Now, we have a little bit at the end, which I've added on into this fourth series of recruitment journeys. It's kind of an advice-based section where we take the profiles of four hypothetical recruiters at different stages of their career, and we try to give them a little bit of advice. And I'm pretty certain you're qualified to answer each of these. We'll start with number one.
Yep.
What advice, Sandra, would you give a rookie starting his or her first recruitment role next week?
Be prepared to work very hard. It is hard work, and having a strong work ethic is going to just put you in such a good position. That would be number one. The second thing I think, Pete, is I really genuinely feel like a competitive gene helps people become successful in recruitment. Yeah. Now, that can be internal competition where you're just competing with yourself and you're not looking at whatever anyone else is doing. You're comparing yourself to others.
Yeah.
Or it can be that you are driven by, you know, wanting to be the top of the leaderboard and having that external competition. But I think a competitive spirit is essential, whether it's internal or external. And that's about it. That's all the advice I'd give to someone. I'd say competitive spirit, hard work.
Yeah. Well, look, I think early days, the advice needs to be simple, right? Just get your head down, do what you're going to do, learn from others around you and do as you're told.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Get
so
on the phone, make the calls.
Correct. And one of the things I see and have seen many times over the years, and it's an absolute travesty, is when you see good recruitment talent fallen by the wayside and leaving the industry after 18 months or 2 years because they haven't been in the right company for whatever reason that might be. What advice would you give to somebody who's got recruitment talent and they're talking about leaving the industry after a couple of years?
I would definitely, look, you know, if they enjoy the firm that they're working for, but they don't feel like the desk is right, don't be afraid to say, hey, look, I want to try something new. I want to try something different. I don't think this is the right market for me for these reasons. That is an external factor though. You know, I I actually don't see that situation happening that often, Pete. Mm. You know, like mostly if someone's sitting there 2 years into their career and they're going, oh, I haven't found my groove or I'm not enjoying this, it may be, it might not be the right role for them.
Mm.
That could be the answer, is it's just not going to be the right role for them.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, the role does not get any easier as you go along. You know, it is always hard work. I mean, sure, you get a nice operating rhythm, you build up a great client base, you know your market better, you've got better, you know, subject matter expertise. So that helps. But recruitment stays hard the whole time you're in it. So, I mean, but if it's someone who's got all the attributes and they're just not, you know, they're not kicking goals or they don't feel like they can succeed the way they want to, speak to someone if they want to stay at their firm. If not, they need to start speaking to people like you. You know, give the reps a call because you guys are so well connected to the market that you can give someone advice on, you know, what different companies look like and feel like and where there could be opportunities for that person to really, you know, hit their strides. I mean, I love hiring people that have been recruiting for 18 months to 2 years. That's actually my sweet spot to hire.
Mm.
And, you know, they're looking, I've hired some brilliant people at that level that have gone on to be incredibly successful. Fundamentally, they've all been pretty successful in the first 18 months to 2 years anyway, but there's something stopping them from really realizing their potential. It could be the market, the desk, how their desk gets split, who they report into, what the manager's vision is, and they might find something better somewhere else for sure. So don't be afraid to speak to people like you in the industry, the RecDirects, but...
Mm.
You know, otherwise, if they want to stay where they are, put their hand up and say, hey, look, I'm loving the concept of this job, but these are the things I'm not enjoying at the moment. You know? What else?
What advice? You're definitely qualified to answer this question. What advice? And you kind of touched on it with the whole kind of selfless chat, but what advice would you give somebody looking to step into management?
Yeah, it definitely comes back to what I said before, Pete. You've got to want to do it for the right reasons.
Mm.
You know, understanding that, you know, that phrase, leadership is about being of, I think it's about being of service to others, not being served by others. I think from memory, that's how it goes.
Mm.
If you can't sort of let the ego go, if you can't find yourself genuinely feeling excited and happy to see people succeed, you know, with your guidance, don't do it. Because you will be constantly disappointed and you'll be feeling like you're taking time away from something else you want to do. Whenever you're spending time with them, you won't be giving the time and attention they need. You're going to start to be bitter about it and who knows what will happen. But it's, you've really got to let the ego go and do it for the right reasons.
Do it for the right. I ask this question on every podcast and that's pretty much what everybody says. Do it for the right reasons.
Do not do it because you think it's how you're going to earn more money.
Yeah. It's more like a vocation, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. And you haven't done this necessarily yet, whatever, but you have worked very closely with one of Australia's finest recruitment entrepreneurs for many years. What advice would you give anybody thinking about starting their own recruitment company?
I haven't done it.
You've thought about it.
No, I haven't.
Oh, wow. There you go.
Honestly, I've never even thought about it. Okay. I like being part of something. You know, I like that camaraderie. I mean, I would say if you want to go and do it for yourself, I mean, plenty of people have and plenty of people have done incredibly well and plenty of people haven't. The ones I see go and do it successfully, they've got an incredible amount of internal drive and energy to keep going at something because you're not going to have someone there to pick you up. You're not going to have someone there to inspire you. You have to be everything for yourself. You have to be your own inspiration, your own motivation to get out of bed and get on with it every day. So if you don't feel like you've got that drive and that energy, everyone knows themselves. If they really look deep, they know who they are as people.
Mm.
You know, it would be a really hard gig if you didn't have that. You know, I think people that do it successfully, they've got a great brand to market, they know their worth. They go into it with their eyes wide open as well. You know, they've done their research, they've done their homework. You know, there's some people that you hear about that are thinking they're going to go start on their own and they're going to, every dollar they build, they're going to get in their back pocket. And it's like, it's not quite how it works. You know, they forget they've got to pay for the cost of doing business.
Correct.
And they've got to chase their own debt, and they've got to be comfortable with clients not paying their bills. So, I mean, you know that better than most people, you know, like, you know, doing your own thing. For all those reasons, I think I've just gone, I don't have any.
don't need the headache.
I don't need the headache. Yeah. But I'm always incredibly inspired when I see people do it. You know, and there are some incredible success stories out there.
Yeah, and our industry is perfect for entrepreneurs who just want to go and do their thing.
You've still got that energy and drive. Like, absolutely, give it a go. Again, you know, like, you haven't got too much to lose. I don't know. Depends on what's going on in your life. But,
correct.
You know, recruitment's a big industry. I'm sure you can come back if it didn't work out.
Exactly. You can always go back, cap in hand, and ask for your job back.
That's right. I'm so sorry.
Sandra, thank you so much for coming on and walking us through your recruitment journey. I'm so delighted I had the opportunity to sit you down on your first podcast. I hope it wasn't too taxing and too scary and a little bit of fun.
I would never listen to it, but it was enjoyable.
All right. I'm going to ask everybody to give me their feedback and send it directly to you.
No.
Thank you, Sandra. Really appreciate it. You take care. Bye
bye.
And that concludes another episode of Recruitment Journeys. Thank you so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, it would be awesome and really appreciated if you could like, share, or subscribe, or ideally all three. Again, we don't ask for much at Recruitment Journeys, just a little bit of love. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time for the next episode of Recruitment Journeys.